All right, so we're taking a deep dive today into walkable cities versus suburban sprawl.
A classic debate.
It is. And you picked a great topic for this deep dive because I think it kind of gets to like how we want to live, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like just thinking about a place to live is one thing, but it's also thinking about a lifestyle. And
Exactly.
what are the trade-offs you're willing to make?
And the good news is we have some pretty awesome material to dig into.
Yeah.
We have this interactive article from the Washington Post that actually like crunches the numbers on walkability.
Oh, why?
And then we have a blog post from Earthshare.
Okay.
They're an environmental nonprofit
Okay.
that looks at how sprawl is impacting ecosystems. And
Interesting.
then to bring in that like bigger policy perspective, we have this Ask MIT climate Q&A with an urban planning professor.
Oh, very cool.
So we're going to get that global perspective as well.
It sounds like we'll really be able to cover this topic from all angles.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think this goes way beyond just a personal decision about where you want to live.
Right.
It really gets into how we design our communities and what impact those choices have on our lives and on the planet as a whole.
You're so right. It's about, way more than just like picking an apartment on Zillow or something like that.
Exactly.
It's about understanding the trade-offs, the consequences, and even like how suburban raccoons are getting smarter.
Wait, what?
I know, right? Who knew?
Okay, you've got to tell me more about these raccoons.
Don't worry, we'll get there.
Okay.
But first, let's start with the Washington Post article.
Sounds good.
They kick things off with a pretty relatable story, actually.
Why?
The author talks about moving from Delhi, which is like a massive city, to Clarendon, Virginia.
Oh, yeah, Clarendon, I've heard of that. I think it's considered a good example of a 15-minute neighborhood, right?
Bingo, it is. And he loved it. He loved being able to walk to everything he needed within like a 15-minute radius.
Sounds ideal.
Yeah, it does. But then it brings up this interesting question. What happens when that 15-minute lifestyle kind of bumps up against needing more space?
That's a dilemma a lot of people face, especially when families start to grow. You might want that yard, a garage, or just an extra bedroom. And suddenly those walkable neighborhoods, they can feel a little less appealing, especially when you factor in the cost.
Totally. And that's exactly what happened to the author. He ended up moving to a nearby neighborhood that was a lot less walkable,
Okay.
and car trips became the norm. It just wasn't as easy to get around on foot.
So it perfectly illustrates that trade-off we're talking about.
Yep. Convenience and community versus space and, maybe a little more breathing room.
Right. It makes you think, is this just a matter of personal preference? Or are there like bigger societal forces at play here? Like, are there things pushing us towards one way of life or the other?
That's a great question. And to answer that, the article starts talking about how we actually measure walkability.
Okay. How do you do that?
Well, they mentioned the study by Sony that used population data and like points of interest, the shops, restaurants, parks,
Sure.
to calculate the average walking time to those amenities across 200 US metro areas.
Wow, 200, that's a lot of data.
It covers something like 60% of the US population.
But I'm thinking, even with all that data relying just on points of interest, like, that it might not tell the whole story.
Yeah, you're
Like,
right.
what about access to healthcare or schools
Right.
or even those less tangible things, that make a neighborhood truly walkable? Like, is it safe to walk at night?
Right, or how friendly are the sidewalks?
Exactly. There's a certain feel to it that's hard to quantify.
I totally agree.
But I guess even with those limitations, the data can still give us some useful insights, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the article actually uses those insights to show the pretty stark contrast between a place like Clarendon, Virginia,
Okay.
which they call a 3.4-minute neighborhood.
Wow. So you can get almost anything you need within like 3 minutes.
Pretty much. And then they contrast that with a 64.5-minute neighborhood like Oakton, Virginia.
Also, a 1 hour walk for a cup of coffee.
Basically, in one, you can just like stroll down the street to grab your coffee. And in the other, even a quick errand becomes like a whole car trip.
It makes you realize how much our built environment shapes our daily lives.
It does, and they quote this urban economics expert in the article who talks about how walkable neighborhoods enable what he calls vehicle light or even vehicle-less living.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people find that idea really appealing.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine the freedom,
Right.
the reduced environmental impact,
Totally.
maybe even like health benefits from not being so reliant on your car.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty compelling, but we have to acknowledge that not everyone shares that vision, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, despite all this talk about the benefits of walkable cities,
Right.
the article cites a Pew Research survey that found that most Americans still prefer larger houses that are farther apart, even if it means driving everywhere.
You know, that really speaks to those deeply ingrained cultural ideals.
It does.
Like the classic American dream of owning a detached home with a yard.
Right. And it's interesting because they introduce us to this woman named Jill Seibert, who lives in Oakton, that 64.5-minute neighborhood.
Right.
And she actually loves it.
Really?
Yeah. She loves the space and the feeling of being close to nature,
mm-hmm.
even though she acknowledges that walkable downtowns have a certain charm.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Some people genuinely value having more space and privacy.
And she even pointed out that those charming townhouses in a walkable town nearby called Vienna.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of Vienna.
Cost just as much as her larger home in the suburbs.
Wow.
So it makes you think how much of this decision is about preference versus, you know, just what people can afford.
Right. It's like if walkability comes with a hefty price tag.
Yeah.
It's automatically going to exclude a lot of people.
Exactly. And that brings us to another crucial point. You know, are walkable cities just a luxury for the affluent, or can we create models that are both sustainable and equitable?
That's a really important question.
It is, and it's something we definitely need to explore further, but before we go down that rabbit hole, the article shifts gears a little bit and starts talking about why urban planners often favor compact cities over sprawl.
And I'm guessing they have some pretty good reasons.
They do. They actually call out the high costs of sprawl. They don't mince words about it.
Hmm. What kind of costs are we talking about?
Well, they quote this urban planning professor, Reed Ewing.
Okay.
And he points out that sprawl is linked to things like higher obesity rates.
But wow.
More traffic fatalities, longer emergency response times.
Jeez.
And even increased infrastructure costs per person.
Yeah, that makes sense. If everything's spread out, you need more roads, more pipes, more power lines. It all adds up.
Right. And those are costs that affect everyone, regardless of where you choose to live.
Exactly. It's not just an individual choice. It has these broader societal impacts.
And then there's the environmental impact, which I think a lot of people don't realize.
Oh, yeah. You might think that living in the suburbs means you're closer to nature.
Right.
But it's often the opposite.
It really is. The article actually mentions that sprawl is a major contributor to biodiversity loss.
Oh, no.
They cite this really alarming statistic that we've lost 3 billion birds in North America just in the last 50 years.
Wow, that's incredible. And I'm guessing habitat loss from sprawl is playing a big role in that.
Definitely. And then there's water pollution.
Right. All that runoff from all that pavement and development.
Exactly. It ends up contaminating a crazy amount of our water sources, something like 40% of the U.S.
That's a sobering thought.
It is. It makes you realize that our development patterns have these far-reaching consequences.
Right. We can't just keep building outwards without thinking about the impact on the environment.
And that's actually a perfect segue to our next source, the EarthShare article, which dives deeper into how sprawl is affecting ecosystems.
Okay. I'm interested to hear what they say.
Well, one thing they talk about is how some wildlife is actually adapting to these human-dominated landscapes.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not all doom and gloom?
Right. It's a glimpse into how resilient nature can be.
Yeah. Even in the face of habitat loss and fragmentation, some species are finding ways to survive and even thrive in these altered environments.
It's like they're evolving alongside us.
They are. They're like little urban pioneers.
Love it.
The article talks about how some songbirds have actually started singing at higher pitches to be heard over the noise pollution.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's like evolution in action happening right in our backyards.
That's amazing.
It is. It shows how adaptable nature can be, but it also makes you wonder what happens when those adaptations reach their limit. Can these species keep up with the constant changes we're making?
That's the big question.
It is. And that's where I think the idea of responsible land and water management becomes super important.
Right. It's not enough to just acknowledge the impact we have to actively look for solutions.
Exactly. And the EarthShare article really emphasizes that point. You know, we need to move beyond just talking about the problem and start finding ways to develop that actually minimize harm and maybe even create benefits for the environment.
Mm. I like that idea of development that actually helps the environment instead of hurting it.
Yeah, so it's not just about preserving what's left. It's about figuring out how to build in a way that supports both human needs and ecological health.
So are they suggesting any specific solutions?
They are. They highlight the concept of mixed-use development as a key strategy.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Basically, instead of having that traditional zoning that separates everything, you know, residential over here, commercial over there.
Right.
Mixed use aims to integrate all those different elements so you have more walkable, self-contained neighborhoods.
So instead of having those sprawling suburbs where you have to drive everywhere, you'd have these more compact neighborhoods where you could walk to the grocery store, grab a coffee, even go to work.
Exactly.
Sounds pretty ideal.
Right. And imagine the benefits, you know, reduced car dependence, lower carbon emissions,
totally.
A greater sense of community.
Yeah, it seems like it could be a win-win.
But I have a feeling it's not as simple as just, you know, deciding to build things differently.
Well, you're right. There are definitely some challenges. And one of the biggest is existing zoning regulations.
Ah, yeah, those pesky regulations.
A lot of communities have rules in place that mandate single-family homes on large lots.
Right.
Which makes it really hard to implement denser mixed-use development.
So it's not just about changing people's minds about what kind of neighborhoods they want. It's about changing the actual rules of the game.
Exactly. And that's where policy comes in.
Okay, so let's talk about policy.
Well, the MIT climate Q&A that we have actually delves into this whole issue of how policy and regulation shape our communities.
Cool.
And they highlight some interesting examples of states that are taking the lead in promoting more sustainable development.
Okay, I'm all ears.
Well, one example is California.
Okay.
They've actually mandated that all new homes have to have solar panels.
Wow, that's pretty ambitious.
It is. It's a pretty bold move to reduce the carbon footprint of new development.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what's stopping other states from doing the same thing.
Well, policy change is a slow process. There's a lot of factors involved.
Right.
But it's definitely encouraging to see some states taking those proactive steps.
For sure. And are there any other examples?
Yeah, another interesting one is Oregon.
Okay.
They've actually revised their zoning laws to allow for denser multifamily housing.
Oh, wow. So instead of continuing to sprawl outward, they're encouraging building upwards.
Exactly. Trying to create more housing options within those existing urban boundaries.
And hopefully reducing that reliance on cars.
Right. But of course, these kinds of changes, they often face pushback.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, you have residents who are concerned about increased traffic changes to the character of their neighborhood, or even potential impacts on property values.
Right. It's understandable that people would be hesitant about change, especially when it comes to their homes and communities.
It is. But it seems like we need to find a way to balance those individual concerns with the broader need for more sustainable development.
I agree. It's a tricky balance.
And the EarthShare article reminds us that we all have a role to play in advocating for policies that promote responsible development.
You're right. It's not just about leaving it to the experts. We can all make our voices heard.
Exactly.
And they actually offer some practical tips for things we can do, even if we're not policymakers or urban planners.
Oh, like what?
Well, they suggest things like advocating for more green spaces in our communities.
Okay.
Making our yards more wildlife friendly.
Yeah.
And even considering the ecological impact of our choices, you know, before we do any new construction projects.
It's a good reminder that even small actions can make a difference.
Exactly. It's about shifting our mindset and realizing that we're not just building homes, we're shaping entire landscapes.
Right, and impacting ecosystems.
And it brings us back to that tension between what we want as individuals and what's best for the collective good.
Yeah.
You know, we're so used to thinking about the American dream as that detached home with a yard.
Right.
But is that really compatible with the need for more sustainable, more compact communities?
That's a really thought-provoking question.
It is. It challenges us to rethink our assumptions about what a good life really looks like.
Yeah, maybe the American dream of the future isn't about owning a big house, but about having access to vibrant, walkable communities, green spaces, a sense of belonging.
Yeah, maybe it's less about square footage and more about quality of life.
Exactly. And I think that idea resonates with a lot of people, especially as we become more aware of the challenges we're facing, like climate change, social inequality, the loss of biodiversity.
Right. It makes you wonder if maybe we need a paradigm shift, not just in how we build, but in how we think about what a good life actually is.
Yeah, a shift from focusing on accumulating stuff to prioritizing experiences, connection, and a lighter footprint on the planet.
That's a beautiful thought.
It is. And it's a good reminder that we have choices to make.
We do. And this deep dive has really opened my eyes to how complex this issue is.
Yeah, me too.
It's not about picking aside walkable cities or sprawling suburbs. It's about understanding the trade-offs, the challenges, the opportunities.
Having those tough conversations about how to create communities that support both human well-being and environmental sustainability.
Exactly. And maybe even redefining what home means in the 21st century.
That's a perfect way to sum it up.
It makes you wonder, though, like at what point do those adaptations hit a wall?
That's a good question.
Yeah, like can these species keep up with all the changes we're making to their habitats?
Yeah, that's where I think responsible land and water management becomes even more important.
Right. It's not just about preserving what we have left. It's also about being more mindful about how we develop in the future.
Exactly. We need to move beyond just acknowledging the impact of sprawl
Right.
and actually start looking for solutions that work for both humans and the environment.
So what kind of solutions are we talking about here?
Well, they talk about this concept called mixed-use development.
Okay.
And it's basically, instead of having that traditional zoning where you have like residential areas over here and commercial areas way over there.
Right, everything's all separate.
Yeah.
Exactly. And mixed use tries to kind of integrate those things more. So you end up with these more walkable, self-contained neighborhoods.
So you could have like apartments above shops
Exactly.
and offices and parks all kind of mixed together.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have to drive everywhere for everything.
Right, it'd all be right there.
Exactly. Lower carbon emissions,
Okay.
a greater sense of community.
Yeah, it sounds great in theory, but I bet there are some challenges.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the biggest challenges is actually those existing zoning regulations.
Oh, right, those.
You know, a lot of communities have rules in place that basically mandate single-family homes on large lots.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to implement denser mixed-use development, even if you want to.
So it's not just about changing people's minds about what kind of neighborhoods they want to live in.
Right.
It's about changing the actual rules.
Exactly. And that's where policy comes into play.
Okay, let's talk policy.
So the MIT climate Q&A that we have.
It actually goes into this in a bit more detail, and they highlight some interesting examples of states that are taking the lead in promoting more sustainable development.
Cool. Give me the highlights.
Okay, well, one example is California. And, you know, California is often kind of ahead of the curve on these
Yeah,
things.
they are.
So they've actually mandated that all new homes have to have solar panels.
Oh,
It's a pretty bold move.
it is. I wonder what's stopping other states from following suit.
Well, like I said, policy change is slow,
Yeah.
and there are a lot of different factors involved.
Right.
But it's good to see some states at least being proactive about it.
For sure.
Another interesting example is Oregon.
Okay.
And they've actually gone so far as to revise their zoning laws to allow for denser multifamily housing.
So instead of sprawling outward, they're encouraging building upwards.
Exactly. Create more housing options within those existing urban boundaries.
Makes sense.
And hopefully reduce that reliance on cars at the same time.
Right. But I imagine those kinds of changes don't always go over well with everyone.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's often a lot of pushback
Yeah.
from residents who are concerned about, you know, increased traffic,
Right.
changes to the character of their neighborhood,
Yeah.
impacts on property values, all that stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's understandable that people would be a little bit apprehensive about change, especially when it comes to where they live.
It is, but at the same time, it feels like we need to find ways to balance those individual concerns
Right.
with the larger need for more sustainable development.
It's a tough balance.
It is. And, you know, the EarthShare article makes a good point, which is that we all have a role to play in advocating for policies that promote responsible development.
You're right. It's not just the policymaker's job. It's on all of us.
Exactly. And they even offer some practical tips for things that we can do, even if we're not like urban planners or anything.
Oh, cool. What kind of things?
Well, they talk about things like advocating for more green spaces in our communities,
Okay.
making our yards more wildlife friendly,
Yeah.
and even considering the ecological impact of our choices, you know, before undertaking any new construction projects. It's all about that mindset shift,
Right.
realizing that our actions have consequences for the environment.
And it goes back to that tension that we were talking about before, you know, between individual preferences and the collective good.
Yeah.
We've been so conditioned to think about the American dream as like owning a detached home with a yard.
Right, the white picket fence.
But is that really compatible with, you know, building more sustainable, more compact communities?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is. It's like we need to rethink what a good life actually looks like.
Yeah, maybe the American dream of the future isn't about owning a big house,
Right.
but about having access to those vibrant, walkable communities, green spaces,
Yeah.
just a sense of belonging.
I love that it's less about square footage and more about quality of life.
Exactly. And I think that really resonates with people, especially as we become more aware of the challenges that we're facing, like climate change, social inequality, the loss of biodiversity.
Right. And, you know, maybe we need like a paradigm shift, not just
Yeah.
in how we build, but also in how we think about what a good life is.
Yeah, maybe instead of focusing on accumulating more stuff,
Right.
we start prioritizing experiences, connection. a lighter footprint on the planet.
That's a beautiful thought.
It is. And it's a reminder that we have choices.
We do.
And that those choices have consequences.
Well, this deep dive has really been eye-opening.
Yeah.
It's so much more complex than just picking aside walkable cities or sprawling suburbs. It's about understanding all those different factors.
Right. All the trade-offs, the challenges, the opportunities.
And having those tough conversations about how we create communities that are good for both people and the planet.
Exactly.
And maybe even redefining what home means in this crazy 21st century world.
That's a great way to put it.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive into walkable cities versus suburban sprawl.
Yeah.
What would you say is like the biggest takeaway?
The biggest takeaway.
Yeah. Like, what do you hope our listeners are walking away thinking about?
I think it's really important for them to realize that this isn't as simple like this or that kind of choice.
Right.
We've seen that there are so many different layers to this issue.
Totally. You know, we've talked about everything from like, you know, those personal preferences and economic realities,
right,
to the environmental impact and even those, you know, fascinating ways that wildlife is adapting to our human world.
Yeah. It's really incredible.
It is. We've explored why that 15-minute neighborhood lifestyle is so appealing.
Yeah.
But we've also acknowledged, you know, that it's not always realistic or even the best fit for everybody.
Right. Every situation is different.
Exactly. And we've dug into those often hidden costs of suburban sprawl.
Right.
All those ripple effects that go way beyond just our individual neighborhoods.
Right. It affects public health,
yeah,
environment, social equity even.
It's a big deal. And we've seen how policy decisions play a huge role in shaping how our communities are designed and how we live.
Absolutely everything from those zoning regulations,
all right,
to things like California's solar panel mandate,
right,
or Oregon's efforts to promote denser housing.
It's all connected.
It is. It's a reminder that this conversation isn't just happening, you know, in some academic ivory tower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is happening in city council meetings, planning commissions, and even around our own dinner tables.
So true. And speaking of dinner tables, I can't help but think about that question you posed earlier about the American dream.
Oh, yeah.
Could it actually evolve to embrace a vision of home that's less about, you know, how much space you have and more about community connection, a lighter footprint on the planet?
That's the question, isn't it?
It is. Like, is it possible to actually shift those deeply ingrained cultural ideals, or are we just going to keep sprawling outwards?
Yeah, chasing that bigger house.
Yeah.
Even as the costs keep going up.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is a really complex question, and I don't think anyone has a clear answer.
Right.
But I do think that by talking about these issues, by challenging those assumptions, by being open to new ideas,
yep,
we can start to create a different kind of future.
A future where maybe home isn't defined by square footage or, you know, how many bedrooms you have.
Right.
But by the strength of our communities and the vibrancy of our public spaces.
And our connection to nature.
Exactly. And I think that vision really resonates with a lot of people, especially now as we're all becoming more aware of the environmental challenges we're facing.
Yeah, definitely climate change.
Right.
Social inequality.
The loss of nature.
All of it.
Yeah. So for our listeners who are maybe feeling inspired but also a little overwhelmed by all of this.
Yeah, it's a lot to take in.
What's like one concrete step they could take to make a difference?
Well, I always encourage people to check out the sources we've talked about.
Yeah.
You know, dive a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Post article, for example, has that interactive map.
Right.
Where you can actually see how your own neighborhood stacks up in terms of walkability.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It is. It's a good way to kind of get a sense of your own context.
Right.
And start thinking about the possibilities for change.
Right. And the EarthShare article has all those practical tips,
okay,
for living more sustainably, even if you're in a suburban setting.
Right. Even small changes can make a difference.
Totally. And most importantly, I think just stay curious.
Yeah.
You know, keep exploring these ideas. Talk to your neighbors. Get involved in your community.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, the future of our communities is shaped by all of us.
That's a good point.
Not just by, you know, architects and urban planners.
Right. It's a collective effort.
It is. We all need to be part of the solution.
Well said. And on that note, I want to thank you so much for joining me for this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in and keep exploring.